The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I should be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. However, that's a little bit of false advertising because we have run out of Reader's Digest. As you have well aware, as I've mentioned before, Reader's Digest is only doing 9 issues in per year now instead of 12. And so what we have to do is on 3 times a year, I have to do 2 months' worth of reading from 1 month worth of magazine. And what's happened is we've now run into 2 months with a 4 Tuesdays and then a 5 Tuesdays. So we've run out. However, we haven't run out of Reader's Digest stuff because a while back they set out a bunch of stuff that they didn't put in their magazine that I managed to save on my wonderful little computer. And so I have it in front of me right now. So we're still going to get Reader's Digest stuff. It's just not going to be from the current issue. And I apologize for that, but there's not a darn thing I can do about it. So anyway, let's start off with A Claim of Ancient Burials Shakes Up Human Evolution Story, Sparks Debate. Controversial evidence suggests that our relative Homo naledi was capable of complex behavior despite its much smaller brain. Deep inside a South African cave, researchers say they may have discovered graves dug by our ancient small-brained relatives more than 100,000 years before the oldest known human burials, a claim that would revise the story of our evolution. The international team of scientists studying the Rising Star cave system northwest of Johannesburg also reported finding limestone walls engraved with triangles, squares, and crosshatches that they attributed to the same relative, Homo naledi, which is N-A-L-E-D-I, a contemporary of the early humans. But the findings announced Monday at the Richard Leakey Memorial Conference at Stony Brook University in New York, and in 3 papers posted online, triggered the kind of fierce debate that has followed H. naledi since its discovery made headlines in 2015. Experts not involved in the work are sharply divided over the evidence that H. naledi was burying its dead. Several also said there was no evidence that the engravings were thousands of years old. And there's some pictures of the engravings, and they're very simple. They're just carvings in the stone. Still another expert said the extreme difficulty involved in entering the cave makes it highly unlikely that anyone but H. naledi would have carved the symbols. The dispute wrecks how much is at stake for our understanding of ancient history and for the reporting of other potentially important discoveries. If true, the latest study would overthrow the dogma that the burial of dead is the sole province of our species, Homo sapiens, Latin for wise human. This is a great moment in human history, declared Lee Berger, the South African paleontologist and National Geographic explorer in residence, who co-wrote all 3 papers. People have wondered, Berger said, what will we do when we meet another culture as complex as us? Well, you just did. Scientific tapes have dated H. naledi bones found in the cave at between 236,000 and 335,000 years old. That's much older than the 92,000-year-old graves at Kosev's cave in Israel, often cited as the earliest known human burials. Neanderthals disposed of their dead 430,000 years ago at Cima de los Huesos, Pit of Bones in Spain. But Berger stressed that burial is a massively more complex and significant than mere disposal. What you are seeing here is a repeated ritual, a response to the dead that has meaning, he said. The implications are remarkable, because some scientists have connected larger brain size to the advanced behaviors that set humans apart from other primates. Yet H. naledi's brain is about 450 to 600 cubic centimeters, or one-third the size of a modern human's. For comparison, H. naledi's brain was about the size of a grapefruit, and the human brain is the size of a medium cantaloupe. At times through his 30-year career, Berger has drawn vigorous criticism for announcing or publishing research before gathering sufficient supporting evidence. He, in turn, has criticized the practice of waiting years to share discoveries with the public, calling it elitist. The new findings, he says, come not from Lee Berger. This is a massive group of some of the brightest minds on the planet. In the papers, Berger and his team describe how different layers of sediment are mixed in the areas around the bodies, which indicates the digging and filling of a grave. They also point to the discovery of a baby with intact vertebrae, including the parts of each vertebrae which are used unfused in an infant. Those bones would almost certainly separated had the body not been buried, said Frederick Grine, a professor of anthropology and anatomical sciences at Stony Brook University, who was not part of the study team. Much to my delight, I found the burial paper to be convincing, Grine says. Marco Petrolaggia, director of the Australian Research Center for Human Evolution at Griffith University, said that while he doubts the new research will persuade all scholars, my view is that the evidence for interments in pits is convincing. The pits are reminiscent of burials of Homo sapiens and Neanderthals. But Ario Val, a full-time researcher at the French National Center for Scientific Research at Aix-en-Provence, said that while she was impressed by the amount of work within collecting data, I wasn't convinced back in 2015, and I'm not convinced today. I think at this stage we are not at a point where the evidence we can confidently exclude other scenarios that don't involve mortuary practices. For example, Val said, rain or a mud flow could have carried bones from another part of the cave to the chamber where they were found. The researchers say they have seen no geological evidence to support either possibility. Val said individuals could have entered the cave seeking refuge from predators or uncomfortable temperatures and then been killed by an animal or a partial cave collapse. All would leave bones, none would amount to burial. I think the evidence for deliberate burial is interesting, said Bernard Wood, University Professor of Human Origins at George Washington University, but I don't think it's decisive. One major point of contention has been the difficulty H. Naledi would have had in transporting this dead to the cave chambers 300 feet below ground. The descent requires squeezing through passages as narrow as 7 inches. Berger had to lose 55 pounds to make the descent and then suffered from a torn rotator cuff on the way out. Boy, I couldn't do that. I'm claustrophobic. They said researchers have been able to take cameras and gear through the passages. Moreover, H. Naledi had a smaller body better suited to the task, just 5 feet in height with long legs, ape-like soldiers, and hands and feet similar to our own. Okay, they are smaller than us, but the spaces they have to crawl through are really tiny, Val said, and somehow they are pushing or dragging a dead person in front of them or behind them, and doing that presumably for generations. Most experts interviewed were not persuaded by claims that engravings found on the cave walls were made by H. Naledi between 241,000 and 335,000 years ago, which would make them among the oldest symbols ever discovered. In theory, those rock engravings could have been made by cavers in the 1930s, Wood said. They have jumped to the assumption that they were made by H. Naledi. And Petrogalio wrote in an email, I think it's entirely possible that Homo sapiens was in these caves. However, researchers who have explored the cave system say there's no evidence that anyone, aside from a few modern cavers, has entered the chamber since the time of H. Naledi. I see no reason to doubt that these markings were made by people who came into there and left the bodies, says British archaeologist Paul Bond, author of the 2016 book Images of the Ice Age. Bond pointed out that similar cross-hatching marks were discovered in Gorn's Cave in Gibraltar and are believed to have been left behind by Neanderthals more than 39,000 years ago. Moreover, he said, there is evidence that some Homos were willing to put themselves through physical hell to leave an image for people to see. He pointed to engraved figures discovered in a portion of the Perigouset Cave in France that can only be reached by crawling about 425 feet through a narrow passage. Berger said that he and his colleagues have adopted the most plausible hypotheses, and that critics must prove that someone else entered the caves and made the engravings. That does not say Bob was there or Kilroy was there, he said. I am building with National Geographic a big global team of the very finest people who work on both interpretation of engravings, but also how to date them, he added. At a lecture last fall, Berger describes finding fragments of charcoal, burnt antelope bones, rocks arranged as hearth, and soot marks on the white cave walls, all indicating that ancient hominins were using fire for light and cooking. These discoveries have not been published, and Berger said efforts to date the soot marks will be difficult because radiocarbon method can only be applied to organic materials up to 60,000 years old. Humans who have entered the cave describe a harrowing descent that must have required great skill and determination from ancient hominins. My adrenaline is pumping and my mouth is dry, and I need that last sip of water, said Kenny Leo Molapane, a National Geographic explorer and lead excavator, describing the entrance to a section of the cave called the Chute Labyrinth. Essentially, it's a crack in the ground, with major dolomite points sticking out of it, grabbing onto you, preventing you from falling down to your death. And there's a picture of the cave here, and boy, it does look bad. It's very narrow, lots of sharp points hanging down, lots of very sharp-looking rocks around on the ground. The floor of the cave is damp, the air cool and dusty with a smell like after it's rained, said Sarah Johnson, a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who has made dozen descents. It's surreal sitting in this area where you know there were ancient humans sitting thousands of years ago, Johnson said. It's very humbling. That's interesting. The Great Unconformity. The mystery of Earth's missing times. There's more than a billion years that's gone. And there's a picture here of the Grand Canyon, where hundreds of millions of years were found to be missing. And it's a beautiful picture if you've ever read the Grand Canyon. I know if you're visually impaired, you may not have seen it, but it's a drastic thing. It's very, very steep cliffs, bright colored red and brown. It's just a gorgeous sight. One of the cool things about rocks, among many cool things, is they allow us to look back into the past. The further down in a rock's layer you go, the older the rock. Studying layers and where these layers merge can tell us about local geology, as well as big events in our planet's history, such as the time it rained for almost 2 million years. Sometimes, though, geologists found a gap in the record, where layers of rocks are sat on top of older rocks with no middle-age layers in between. Known as unconformities, these can be the result of no new layer of rock being laid down during the intervening years, or rock being laid down and then eroded or washed away by geological processes. Unconformities are relatively common, but every now and then a big one is found that takes some explaining. Exploring the Grand Canyon in 1869, John Wesley Powell noticed a gap in ages between layers of rock. Sitting on top of rocks ages 1.4 to 1.8 billion years old was a rock that was just 520 million years old. While a huge mystery in itself, earning the name the Great Unconformity, the mystery grew when other sites around North America and the world were discovered to have missing rock dating from just before 550 million years ago. Before that time, in a lot of places around the world, up to a billion years of rock in history are missing. So what happened to it? The short answer is that we still don't really know, but we do have several theories. One proposed in 2019 is that the gap was caused by snowball Earth, proponents of which believe the Earth's surface froze from pole to pole. According to this theory, the missing rock can be explained by glacier growth and then retraction, scouring at the rock and taking it into the seas. However, since that study was published, other studies have challenged it. A 2020 study looked at rock at Pikes Peak, Colorado. Here, older rock made its way to the surface before being heavily eroded around 717 million years ago. This means it was likely caused by processes other than snowball Earth. Instead, the team believes that the unconformities seen around the world, though often from the same time, were not made by a common cause. We're left with a feature that looks similar across the world, when in fact, there may have been multiple unconformities, plural, lead author of the 2020 study, Dr. Rebecca Flowers, said at the time. We may need to change our language if we want to think about the Great Unconformity as being more complicated, forming at different times and at different locations and for different reasons. The Great Unconformity, which took place in North America, the team suggests, was likely caused by the breakup of the supercontinent Rodina 700 to 800 million years ago, bringing older rock to the surface while the newer rock got swept into the ocean. While a reasonable explanation, it's still slightly depressing thought that we have lost so much information about what happened to our planet, or parts of it, during all those millions of years. There's more than a billion years that's gone, says Barra Peak, co-author of a 2021 study, in this puzzling gap in Earth's history. It's also a billion years during an interesting part of Earth history, where the planet is transitioning from an older setting to the modern Earth we know today. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry about that. Somehow the computer screwed up here and left us with some quiet time there for a few seconds. My apologies. I'll try to correct it. Well, after my momentary snafu there, and I do apologize for that, let's go ahead and switch over to Consumer Reports. See our scam protection guide. It's harder than ever to tell if the email or phone call is from someone trying to steal your money, personal information, or both. What you need to know, and there's a picture of a computer under glass being surrounded by sharks, which somehow kind of fits. Technology offers so many common, convenient ways to keep in touch with friends and family and manage our daily lives, cell phone calls, emails, texts, social media, and beyond. But it also allows would-be scammers to contact us on these platforms relentlessly and try to get hold of our money, personal information, and identities. It can make you dread the simple act of answering the phone or opening an email. That's how Allison Friedman feels. A business owner in New York City, Friedman was fooled into giving important financial details to a scammer. Recently, on a hectic day, I got a text saying there was a problem with my bank account, she says, and said that for security reasons she needed to click a provided link and verify her details. Friedman assumed she'd made a mistake in a Zelle payment. I figured I must have typoed the address. I just sent money for upholstery cleaning. So Friedman clicked the link and entered her bank account username and password, only to receive another text that a new user was attempting to log in. Sensing that something was wrong, she called her bank directly. I felt like such a fool, says Friedman, who ended up not losing money to the scammer thanks to her bank's fraud prevention team. Now, she says, I barely answer my phone unless I recognize the number. Given the ever-increasing sophistication of scams and scammers, caution is warranted. Plus, these criminals may or be more likely to target older adults, thinking they're less tech-savvy than their younger counterparts. According to the Federal Trade Commission, those in their 60s and 70s who reported that they've been defrauded have median losses of $666 and $1,000, respectively. The numbers are $552 for those in their 50s, $600 for those in their 40s, and $590 for those in their 30s. But you are not powerless against scammers. This guide will help you raise your awareness of criminal gambits in the making so you can sidestep them. It will also tell you what to do if you've been scammed. And don't feel embarrassed or ashamed if you've been tricked, says Eva Velasquez, president and CEO of the Identity Theft Research Center in San Diego. Even the most tech-savvy people have been fooled by these cunning new frauds. The new text scams. And there's a picture here of a phone that says, your account is on hold. We're having some trouble with your current billing information. Recover your account immediately. Click below. Please take action on your account within 48 hours to avoid permanent suspension. Regards, Netflix service. Those text messages certainly are attention-grabbing. Say there's a problem with your Amazon, Apple, Netflix, bank, or cell phone account, or that you've won a great prize or a gift card. Or it could be a wrong number text from someone who supposedly contacted you in error. Whatever the conceit, these texts usually urge you to click immediately on an embedded link, but doing so can take you to a web page that requests personal information, like passwords to your Netflix account or credit card numbers to pay for shipping and taxes on the prize you supposedly won. Instead of the prize, you could find unauthorized charges on your credit card or worse. 60% of scam texts are designed to transmit malware, says Michael Broomer, head of Global Data Breach Resolution at Experian, the credit reporting agency. This malicious software can infect your device and grab enough personal information to take over your shopping, financial, and social media accounts, or even steal your identity. Text scams or smishing are overtaking call scams as criminals' digital tool of choice. And now accounts for 22% of all fraud reports to the FTC's Consumer Sentinel Network, which shares canned info with law enforcement agencies. One likely reason, it's easy for fraudsters to send out numerous messages at a time via a chatbot, a tool that can engage in human-sounding communication. Spotting a text scam. One of the best prevention tips is to be wary of any unsolicited out-of-the-blue outreach, says Eden Iskell, public policy manager of the nonprofit National Consumers League, and any text that mentions fraudulent activity detected or free gift should set off alarms. Spelling and grammar mistakes may also be signs of a scam message. And this is a little sidebar here from me. I read the Washington Post on a regular basis, and they had a test of how to recognize online scams. And it was really fascinating. And there were nine questions, and I got eight of them right. The one I got wrong was one that was not a scam. So I feel kind of good about that. But you really have to be careful these days. So if you're unsure, don't respond or click on a link. Contact the source the text appeared to come from through official channels. If it's regarding your credit card, call the issuer, Velasquez says. But if it's about your bank account, call the bank directly or log into your account online to investigate. Call your cable company's customer service number directly. If you get a confirmation like the text was a fake, forward it to 7726 to help your wireless carrier identify scammers. Then block the sender and delete the text. If you open the text, opening a suspicious text or even sending a simple reply, for example, you don't have the right person, won't put you in danger of malware being transferred to your device or your personal data being taken, Velasquez says. But it does tell the fraudster your number is active, so you could receive more smishing texts in the future. The same can happen if you click on unsubscribe or stop links. Simply forward the text, then block the sender and delete the text. If you clicked on a link and were led to a website, exit the browser ASAP and delete the URL from your browsing history. Then forward, block, and delete as above. Temporarily disconnect from Wi-Fi or turn on airplane mode. Then, because you can't always tell when the device has been infected with malware, it's smart to run a security program, and we'll talk about that later, or call the device's manufacturer for tech support or referral to a tech pro who can scan it, says ISEL. And if you shared info that could compromise an account, notably a password, change the relative information such as a password and username. If you got scammed, the remedies vary depending on what was taken and how quickly you became aware of the scam. But if, after reporting and blocking the sender, you suspect or know that someone got into the accounts that have payment methods associated with them, perhaps you notice an unfamiliar auto payment coming out of your bank account or your credit card issuer, put a hold on a card, contact the fraud teams of those companies right away for guidance. You can search online for contact number. You may have to close some accounts and open new ones, Broomer says, and you'll certainly want to change passwords and usernames of compromised accounts. Then get in touch with the customer service or fraud departments at any non-financial accounts and platforms you think may have been affected. If your mobile device isn't working after an encounter with a scammer, whether they reach you by phone or another method, take the device to a tech repair service as soon as possible. This could stop a scammer from accessing your personal data and contacts. Also, call your cell carrier for advice. Search its name and fraud department online to find the appropriate number. They may have to reset the phone. Filing a report with your local police is wise. You might need to do this if you have proof of creditors and credit bureaus that you were defrauded. If you think the scammer may have sufficient information to open lines of credit in your name, address, and Social Security number can be enough. Ask three credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, to freeze your credit to prevent this. Request copies of your credit reports, too, and monitor them and all money-related accounts for a year afterward for oddities like your credit score drifting down for no discernible reason or new credit card accounts you didn't open. Watch for unexpected credit or debit cards in the mail or denials for such cards, says Velasquez, the Identity Theft Resource Center. ISCL and the National Consumers League adds victims of identity theft may also notice incorrect information on a credit report, receive bills for credit cards they did not open, or detect abnormalities in their tax forms or Social Security benefit statements. Depending on your particular situation, you might want to take additional steps. For instance, if you think your Social Security number or Medicare data was used in fraudulent ways, contact those organizations, identitytheft.gov, the Identity Theft Resource Center, idthefthcenter.org/recover, the AARP Fraud Helpline at 877-908-3360, and your local FBI office, fbi.gov/contact-us/field-offices, may have advice for specific issues. If you were scammed, reporting your experience can help federal officials crack down on such criminal activities. You could do this at sites like the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, ic3.gov, and report fraud, ftc.gov, and at donotcall.gov. many of the latest phone scams. Many of us are familiar with those out-of-the-blue calls alerting us to a supposed computer virus or perhaps telling us we owe money to a company or government agency and must pay right away. These calls may sound believable, but they're likely from scammers. Phone fraud cost 68.4 million Americans money in 2022, says the U.S. Spam and Scam Report from Truecaller, creator of a spam-blocking app. The median loss was $1,400 per person scammed. These days, some scammers are taking advantage of technological advances such as artificial intelligence to trick us. With voice cloning, fraudsters snags a snippet of a person's voice, perhaps from a video on social media, or recording during a prior phone call, and creates false statements with the voice print. Recently, a Phoenix TV station reported on such a situation. According to KTVK, an Arizona family received a terrifying call from someone who claimed to have kidnapped their daughter with the sound of her crying in the background. But it was an AI scam, the situation says. Scammers can also spoof or fake phone numbers to make it seem as if they're calling from a specific organization or area. For instance, a 202 Washington, D.C. area code might make the fake call from the IRS seem more credible. Or a criminal may use your area code and first three local digits, hoping the familiar numbers encourage you to pick up. Spotting a phone scam. It can be hard to tell, experts say, but statements like scam likely or potential spam on your call ID may be a tip-off. Spam filtering from your phone carrier or manufacturer may help too. But generally, experts say it's best to let unsolicited calls from unfamiliar numbers and those that appear to be from businesses, government agencies, and other organizations go right to voicemail. If the caller leaves a message, you can listen to it later. If you think the message might be genuine, look up the company or organization, contact info on its website. Call that number, not the one that was left on your voicemail. You can't assume the one in the message is real. If you answered the call, picking up tells the scammer that they've hit on a working number, which could lead to an uptick in such calls in the future. More worrisome is that having a conversation with the caller could allow them to create a voice print of you for use in future scams. So the moment you suspect that you're online with a bad actor or scammy robocall, hang up and block the number. With robocalls, don't press any buttons or use voice commands to opt out of future calls. This could put you on a call again list, says Bromer at Experian. But what if you get one of those scariest relatives in distress calls? Asking a question only they know the answer to can tell you if it's actually your loved one on the line. If you're uncertain, call or text them from another device to verify their safety. For the future, Rachel Woods, an AE starter found up, recommends in TikTok that you post to establish a safe word such as Nantucket with your nearest and dearest to protect you all from falling for this kind of scam. If a scam that started with a phone call cost you money or compromised your personal credentials, or you notice your phone isn't working properly, see New Tech Scams, and we'll look at that in a couple minutes. 7 smart security steps, and these are pretty important things. First of all, slow down. Scammers often press you for an immediate action. Pause and think whether what you're being told is plausible. You could always respond later through an organization's official channels, not a mail, text, or phone number, social media message, or link sent to you. Number 2, share less of your personal info. People on Facebook, Goodreads, and online neighborhoods groups don't need to know your favorite musician, your mother's maiden name, or your birthday. Such life info helps crooks fish for possible answers on security questions. Online quizzes can also provide personal info to scammers. Number 3, delete your old accounts. The more digital accounts you have, the greater the risk of your personal info being stolen or misused. Shut accounts you rarely use and delete the apps. Number 4, allow automatic software updates. These ensure that you always have the latest security patches for smartphones, computers, and router operating systems, allowing them to use usually the default setting, so you might not need to do anything. Number 5, double up. Multi-factor authentication provides an extra layer of security. So if someone steals your bank or email password and tries to use it from an unrecognized device, the account remains sealed until you respond with a second proof of identity, like a one-time code. Scammers may try to get these codes, so never share them over the phone, via text or email. Number 6, stick with safe payment methods. Credit cards and PayPal offer legal protections not found with other methods. With gift cards, cryptocurrency, and wire transfers, it's almost impossible to get your money back if you're scammed. Peer-to-peer payment apps like Venmo and Zelle offer little recourse if you get swindled. It's best to use these only with people you know. Number 7, use antivirus protection. Windows 10 and 11 have Microsoft Defender Antivirus, which can shield you from threats like malware. Check settings to make sure it's turned on. Apple's built-in security is always on. You can get additional protection from software like Avast Premium Security or Bitdefender Internet Security. Get comprehensive security tips at cr.org/securityplanner. Suspicious emails, and this is one of my favorites. Phishing emails, which are designed to get you to share financial and other personal info, have been around since the mid-1990s and are still going strong. And these days, evolving technology can make email ruses harder to detect. For instance, fraudsters can rapidly create believable messages with ChatGPT and AI chatbots, says Steve Baker, founder of the Baker Fraud Report and former director of the FTC's Midwest region. Common email scams play on emotions to get you to send money or information. Joy, you've won something, or fear, your credit card or utility account is locked and you must click the link to update your credentials. Some appeal to your desire to help others, like alerts of a GoFundMe for someone like a terrible disease. One such recent plea was for a toddler in need of medical care, but the donation link in the email sent funders to a scammer, according to a caution from the city of Urbana, Illinois. Spotting an email scam. First, check the email address. On a computer, without opening the email, hover your cursor over the sender's name to bring up the full address. If it's not from the sender you expect or it's odd, say Amazon with two N's instead of Amazon with one N, it's not legit. On a mobile device, open the email, hit reply, but don't hit send a response. This should let you see the sender's address, though you may need to tap on it, Baker says. Another red flag is being asked for any payment for something you ostensibly want. Also, a reputable business won't send an email requesting updated information via an embedded link. You'd likely to be asked to log into your account through its website or call customer service. When in doubt, go to the business's official website and get the contact information there. Be cautious about GoFundMe requests with a tight deadline or requests for cash. And there's a picture here of a Kohl's ad, supposed Kohl's ad. You have won a Rachel Ray cookware, and cook on that. Be careful with QR codes. During the pandemic, restaurants started to use QR codes to give touchless access to menus. Patients scanned the code with their smartphone, and a link to the menu popped up. Such codes are now used in various official settings, for instance, to provide information to visitors at certain museums and at Walmart's self-checkout lanes. But scammers are also creating QR codes that can lead to fake payment websites or download malware, the FBI says. The Better Business Bureau says these may show up in emails or text offering debt consolidation, or on ad flyers, on phony parking tickets placed on windshields, or on stickers put on parking meters. Think twice if you see a QR code on a sticker. It's very easy for bad actors to print out a sticker with their own QR code and place it over the legitimate one, says security expert. Also, bypass any that looks odd, very big, small, or pixelated, or in a text email payment request, says lawyer Steve Wiseman, founder of ScamSide, a website that tracks numerous kinds of scams. Before you use a code, check the whole website address displayed. The URL should start with HTTPS, be similar in length to other URLs, and have no misspellings. If you scan a code and are sent an unexpected website, close it. Shut your Wi-Fi off and run a security program or consider having your device scanned by a tech professional, even if you didn't share personal info or make a payment. Malware can be downloaded just by connecting to the scammer's website, Wiseman says. And they have a fake parking citation here, which has a similar kind of thing. Can you block scammers? There's no surefire way to stop all the undesirable messages, but these strategies can help decrease the volume considerably. For phone calls, wireless carriers' free filtering apps such as AT&T's ActiveArmor, T-Mobile's Scam Shield, and Verizon Call Filter identify and block calls that are likely to be scams or spam. Premium options, $4 a month per line, add features like reverse number lookup. In addition, Apple and Android phones let you silence calls from people you don't know. On an Android phone, go to the phone app, then settings, then block numbers, and turn on unknown. On an iPhone, go to phone settings, then phone, then choose silence unknown callers. And you can sign up for the National Do Not Call Registry, donotcall.gov. This won't stop fraudsters, but it blocks most real sales calls. Groups such as charities and political organizations are exceptions. That way you'll know sales calls are fairly likely to be scams, and you can be on your guard. For text messages, on an Android phone, open Messages, tap the three-dot icon on the top right of the screen, go to Settings, then Spam Protection, and turn on Enable Spam Protection. This way you'll be alerted if a message may be coming from a dubious source. On an iPhone, go to Settings, then Messages, then Filter Unknown Senders, and you won't receive message notifications from senders who are outside your contact list. For emails, email platforms do not try to block dangerous emails, such as phishing attempts, but some can still get into your inbox. You can filter out messages from specific email addresses and those that have particular words in the subject line. Search the platform's help center with a term like email filtering. For social media accounts, make these as private as possible to keep the circle of people who can post or send you messages small. That's the safest option for most consumers, said Eden Iskell at the National Consumers League. How you do this and what exactly you can do varies by platform. So you need to check your account settings, for instance, on Facebook. You can change the who can send you friend requests from everyone to friends of friends. A reverse search in Google Images, search your web browser for HAL, may tell you whether photos were stolen or actually associated with other people. For a charity, see how it's rated on sites such as Charity Navigator, charitynavigator.org, or use the organization's website instead of an email link to donate. If you opened a donation email, as long as you didn't click a link or download the attachment, you're a little risk, even if you replied to the email. This could put you on an email again list, though. Skip any click here to unsubscribe links, which take you to a malicious website, or give criminals the chance to hack your device, says Kathy Stokes, the AARP's Director of Fraud Programs. Last, label the email spam or junk, and it should be moved out of your inbox. Then block the sender. If you did click on a link or an attachment, close the email right away and label and block as described above. If your click opened a website's window, shut it properly and delete the address from your browser history to make sure you don't accidentally open it again. Promptly trash any attachments you downloaded and disconnect from Wi-Fi or turn off your phone, tablet, or computer for a minute. This may interrupt any malware that's downloading. To make sure, run a security program or have a tech pro check your device. What if you entered personal details such as your credit card login? Then see the new tech scams, and we'll look at that. If you got scammed, follow the guidance in the new tech scams. And if your email was hacked, ask your email provider what steps you need to take next. For instance, if you can't regain control of your account, you might need to open a new one. Facebook frauds. Scam artists are loading up Facebook, Instagram, and other social media platforms with cons. In 2022, social media was the starting point for 11% of reported fraud, where a contact method was specified. The median loss per instance was $528. Just a few examples of what you may see in your social media feeds. Ads touting incredible markets on all kinds of products, offers of low-interest loans and amazing cryptocurrency investing opportunities, friend requests from strangers who think you sound interesting, or curiously from people who you're already friends with. Some are surely scams. Send off your payments for those interesting products, for instance, and you may get nothing, or just an item of little value like a sticker instead of the 50 feet tool set you ordered, Stokes says. Spotting a social media scam. If you receive an odd message from a friend or relative, they were likely hacked, says Velasquez at the Identity Theft Resort Center. Don't respond. Contact them off the platform to see if the scammer was reaching out in their name. That stranger who wants to get to know you on social media? They may be after money and not friendship. It's wise to ignore anyone you don't know, no matter how many common connections you have, Stokes says. And keep in mind that any information you share on social media, from your answers on those ever-present quizzes to pictures from a recent vacation to a health diagnosis, can be used by scammers to buddy up to you and gain your trust. Also, any loan or investing opportunity that sounds too good to be true probably is, especially cryptocurrency investment offers. From January 2021 through March 2022, almost $4 out of every $10 reported loss to a fraud originating on social media was in crypto, far more than any other payment method, according to the FTC. For shopping, you may get some insight by checking for negative comments below a product post. Seeing what the Better Business Bureau, bbb.org/search, has to say, and searching online for the business's name and the word scam or fraud. Your safest move might be going directly to a familiar brand's website and buying there. While certain ads in your feed may be legitimate, it can be tough to tell. For instance, Facebook blue check mark indicates the seller identity has been verified, but scammers can duplicate such visuals as well as logos. If you responded, merely messaging with another account which won't put you at risk. But stop if you have uneasy feeling, then block the sender and report the incident to the platform's help center. If you revealed personal details, account numbers and or passwords, for instance, or clicked on a link to download or attachment, follow the related advice starting on the new tech scams, which you just looked at. If you got scammed, follow the advice on the new tech scams to secure your account and request chargebacks and refunds. For instance, if you used a credit card to pay for an item that never arrived, contact your card issuer. If you lost money investing in cryptocurrency, your odds of recouping are low, experts say, but it's still smart to report it, as outlined in the new tech scams. And if you lost access to a social media account because of a scam, get in touch with the platform's fraud department. Go to the platform's website to find the contact info. If you have to open a new account, alert friends to communicate with, not to communicate with the old account, to reduce their likelihood of being scammed too. And watch out for this ATM card scam. When using an ATM, you probably should shield your PIN to make sure no would-be thief sees it. But there's a newer ATM scam you might not yet be aware of called the glue and tap. Here, according to news reports, a fraudster jams an ATM card slot reader so you can't insert your card. They then suggest that you bypass the slot and use the card's tap function instead. But unless you log out of the account after a tap transaction, which you might not realize is necessary, the scammer can access your account once you've walked away from the ATM. If you encounter a jammed ATM terminal and a stranger is on hand offering advice, find another location with a functioning machine. You may want to do the same if someone is just loitering near an ATM you want to use, especially if they try to strike up a conversation. I wouldn't want to interact with any stranger hanging out while I conduct a financial transaction, says the AARP's Kathy Stokes. If you lost money through an ATM scam, call the police and file a report as soon as possible. Also, immediately contact the bank to request a refund. If you report the crime within 2 days, you should be protected under the Electronic Fund Transfer Act. How to beat the rising cost of Rx drugs. Are you paying more for a prescription than you used to? Are you being asked to meet a separate deductible for drugs? Is your insurer refusing to cover the drug your doctor prescribed? Did that coupon you were using stop working? When it comes to the cost of drugs today, there's good news and bad news. Thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act signed into law by President Biden in 2022, vaccinations, including the shingles vaccine, are now free for people on Medicare. And most insulin costs just $35 or less a month for people on Medicare Part D. Beginning January 1, 2025, another huge benefit kicks in. Seniors on Medicare Part D won't pay more than $2,000 annually out of pocket for medications. Wow, that's nice. These charges may help many people because even though most Americans have health insurance, high drug costs remain a big problem. 3 in 10 adults reported not taking medicine as prescribed at some point in the past year because of the cost. According to a Kaiser Family Foundation March 2022 survey, this includes about 1 in 5 who said they have not filled a prescription due to the price. But high drug costs are just part of the unaffordability problem. People may also have to reach further into their wallets because of changes to their insurance plan. For example, a drug might no longer be covered or might be covered less well, says Stacy DeSestina, professor of health policy at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine in Nashville, Tennessee, and an expert in health cost. When either happens, you're stuck with a higher bill, she says. Other causes of drug price sticker shock, high deductibles that have to be met, discount coupons have expired, and more. When you first see a price jump, if a drug take suddenly becomes more expensive, make sure the new price is in fact accurate. For example, if you change jobs, make sure the pharmacy has the right insurer information, or it's possible your pharmacy may have lost your details. Says Brandy Letson, PharmD, a co-owner of Cashier Valley Pharmacy in Cashiers, North Carolina. In either event, the pharmacy won't locate your insurance covers properly, and you get charged the full price, she says. After checking that, confirm that the pharmacy has the right info about your drug, Letson says. Sometimes doctors send prescriptions for a larger quantity of drug than you want, or at a higher dosage, which could raise the cost. Price still high? The cost may be one of the scenarios detailed below. Your insurer no longer covers the drugs. Maybe you've changed job and insurance doesn't cover your drug, or your insurer has changed its formulary, the list of drugs it covers. This can happen at the start of each plan year, usually January for Medicare Part D, but it could happen any month with other plans. While insurance must notify you of formulary changes, the alert can be easy to miss or hard to understand, says Stephen Scheldemeyer, PhD, professor at the University of Minnesota, and director of the Prime Institute, which researches economic and policy issues around pharmaceuticals. Formulary changes often involve price increases or a drug being dropped altogether. In fact, in the last 10 years, the number of drugs dropped from coverage has grown dramatically, says Adam Fine, PhD, an expert in drug pricing and founder of the Drug Trends Institute, an industry research firm. His analysis shows that so far in 2023, the three big pharmacy benefits company, which managed drug coverage for insurance companies, dropped a record number of medications, around 600 or more, each off of their formularies. File an appeal. If you have an employer-provided or private insurance and you take a drug that works well and change it to another poses a hazard to your health, ask your doctor and pharmacist to appeal for an exception to with your insurer. This is one important benefit of having a long relationship with a pharmacist, Letson said. If you try to substitute drug unsuccessfully, we can provide records that to the insurance company. To file an appeal, you may need these records as part of the package you submit. The Patient Advocate Foundation can help you have a serious condition such as cancer or rheumatoid arthritis. Call 1-800-532-5274 or go to patientadvocate.org. If you have Medicare Part D and were denied drug isn't an especially tier, you can apply for an exception by calling your plan. If approved, the exception normally runs out at the end of the calendar year. You can ask for longer or apply again. If that's denied, you can file for a redetermination. Your plan should explain how to do this. A standard redetermination takes up to a week, and an expedited one takes 72 hours. Problem, your one-time courtesy Rx ran out. Say you get a new prescription, and when you go to the pharmacy to fill it, you have to cover only a low-cost copay. Understandably, you assume your insurance fully covers the drug. But when you attempt to refill the prescription a month later, you're charged full price. Why? Often insurers provide a 30-day courtesy fill, even when they don't cover the drug, Letson says. Then the second month, the courtesy is over. Ask your insurance about similar drugs. If your insurer agrees to fill a prescription only once, it's probably because they're an alternative that works as well, is safe, and is less expensive, Scheldemeyer says. So ask whether a less expensive generic or alternative can be prescribed instead. Pro tip, nip the problem in the bud when your provider first writes a prescription by asking whether your insurer will cover it. Instead of a cheap copay, you now pay a percentage of the full cost. A formulary change can mean a drug that uses to cost a fixed $10 to $15 copay now costs 20%, 30% or more of its full cost. This is called coinsurance, and you may be asked to pay for a more expensive brand, name meds, or high-cost generics, Sondermeyer says, because coinsurance is based on a drug's full cost. If that increases, your out-of-pocket share will go up too. Solution, if you have an employer insurance and take branded medication for which you pay coinsurance, considering applying for a manufacturer copay coupon, which covers copay as well as coinsurance. Manufacturers offer these because they want to use their medication. The coupon will cover all or most of your costs, usually for about a year, and set number of prescriptions. To find a copay problem, ask your pharmacist, go to the drug manufacturer's website, or go to needymeds.org, a nonprofit that tracks drug discount programs. Your drug company coupon no longer saves you as much. copay cards and other discounted programs offered by branded drug, excuse me, turn the page, buy makers can be major cost savers. But they're not a forever fix, says Vanderbilt's Justinia. They may limit how many prescriptions you can fill in 1 year. Once you reach that, you're back on the hook for the amount the insurer charges you. Or there may also be a dollar limit for how much the manufacturer will cover. Either way, you could be stuck facing a rather large bill. The solution is to contact a manufacturer, assuming that there is no other less expensive and better covered drug that works well to treat your condition. Call the drug company's copay program to see whether there are other payment options or whether an exception can be made. Often they have some leeway to cover your costs in the short term or until a new plan year begins, says Rich Segal, MD, president of Needy Beds. If that's a no-go and your insurance plan is through an employer that operates its own plan, that is self-insured, contact your HR department and appeal for a higher rate of reimbursement. If that doesn't work, consider applying for a patient assistance program from the drug manufacturer by going to needybeds.org and looking up your drugs discount and assistance programs. You must first meet a deductible. You're probably familiar with paying deductibles for doctor visits, but you may have a separate deductible for prescription drugs. You may have to meet your plan's full deductible before your plan's drug coverage kicks in. In either case, the average deductible for an individual on an employer plan, including drugs, last year hovered around $1,700, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, a nonprofit health research and policy group. For Medicare Part D plans, the maximum deductible in 2023 is $505. Solution: kit or pay in cash. Counterintuitively, some drugs can be more expensive when you use insurance to pay for them. And some, including hundreds of low-cost generics, can be purchased inexpensively if you pay for them with cash. For example, Walmart's discount program offers a month's supply of generic drugs for $4 or $10 for a 90-day supply. You can also find online discounts at healthwarehouse.com, costco.com, or costplusdrugs.com. Your local independent pharmacy could also meet or beat a price you found online or at a big chain store. To find out, ask your pharmacist for the lowest possible price it can offer. You could also try to turn in your receipt for prescription purchases at your insurer as an out-of-network cost so that the counts towards your drug or combined medical and drug deductible. In California, for example, plans may accept a receipt of medication and count it towards your deductible. You must try and fail on other drugs before the insurance will cover your med. Called step therapy, your insurance may ask you to try a lower-cost alternative medication before it covers a pricey brand-name drug. It can be problematic if the request happens midway through your coverage year and you already know that the other drugs don't work as well for you. Your new employer's insurance won't have your previous medical records to show that you've been more successful on the med they don't want to cover. Ask your doctor to apply for a prior authorization. Your doctor will ask the insurer to reconsider the decision, and if they do, you'll be charged a copay or coinsurance. If not approved, you'll be on the hook for the full amount. In that case, ask your pharmacist to look for coupons or apply for manufacturer patient's assistance program. Once reserved for low-income people, manufacturers have loosened their eligibility requirements and some have set income caps for over $100,000. You can also save on your meds by buying in bulk. If you're positive you'll be taking the same drug at the same dose for a while, you can realize some eye-popping savings by filling prescriptions for several months at a time. At Amazon Pharmacy, we found a 6-month prescription of a 20 milligram generic Lipitor, Avastatin, for $32.90 compares with $9.50 for a single month supply, a $24 savings. Consider an online pharmacy or subscription service if you take several generics. Two options, ScriptCo and GoodRx. At both, you pay an annual fee and get a free or low-cost common generic med, sometimes just pennies per pill. This could be an option if you take multiple generic drugs. For that same generic, Lipitor, after paying $140 annual manual fee at the script company, you'll be charged $6.57 for a year's worth. For $10 a month gold membership at GoodRx, a year's worth of the same drug will cost $22.43 at Rite Aid. On Medicare Part D, say that you qualify for extra help in 2024. A third of all our enrollees in Medicare Part D get some sort of assistance, according to figures from the Kaiser Family Foundation. And with the Inflation Reduction Act, up to 300,000 additional people will be eligible for assistance. To qualify for the program, your annual income can't exceed $21,000 for an individual or $30,000 for a married couple. Even if your income is higher, you may still be able to get some help. Also, the value of your savings, investments, and real estate other than your home can exceed $16,000 for an individual and $33,000 for a married couple. If you fit the bill, you can get Medicare Part D for free at a reduced cost. Ask for a rebate from the drug company. In addition to drug copay coupons and patient assistance programs, consider calling the drug manufacturer to see whether it is willing to offer you a rebate. Some manufacturers may do this if you ask, says Rich Sagel, MD, president of the Needy Meds, a nonprofit that tracks all U.S. discount drug programs and helps patients find out and fill out any needed applications for assistance free of charge. To find out well if you qualify for the Social Security, go to ssa.gov/extrahelp or call 1-800-772-1213. Corny joke time. Why did the Witcher's team lose the baseball game? Their bats flew away. Can a kangaroo jump higher than the Empire State Building? Of course. The Empire State Building can't jump. And why couldn't the leopard play hide-and-seek? Because he was always spotted. Why was Skick scared of 7? Because 7, 8, 9. Instead of the John, I call my toilet the gym. That way it sounds better when I say I go to the gym first thing every morning. And that's the end of the dad jokes for today. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and so long until next week, and thanks so very much for listening.